Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for the final time on a post-game show 2021 season, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Alongside Dave Manouk, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the program, wherever you may be watching, be it on our YouTube channel or any of our social media platforms. As we mentioned, for the final time, the Jets season has come to an end. It went down, not with a bang, but with a whimper in quite possibly the worst of their four games played in this second round series. The Montreal Canadiens win tonight 3-2 in overtime. They sweep the series 4-0, putting the Jets into very rare company of teams in the history of the NHL that have both swept a first round series and then been swept the series after. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Monday night, the seventh day of the month of June. I mean, I tweeted about this before overtime started. I said that the last time the Winnipeg Jets were facing an elimination game, not including the bubble, so this is going back to the series against the St. Louis Blues, the Jets managed all of 20 shots on goal in that game. Tonight, the Jets have managed to upstage themselves for all the wrong reasons, generating a whopping 16 shots on goal in 60 minutes of hockey, including a grand total of 9 by the forwards.
Is that good?
Absolute disgrace.
Yeah, is that good, Drew? I don't know if that's good or not.
Not good. I know you guys are new to the game, and a lot of people here in the chat that are new to the game, and they might be wondering, is that a good thing, Drew, or is that a bad thing? That's not a great thing. It's really not where you needed to be when the series and your playoff lives were on the line for the Jets forwards to generate a whopping 9 shots on goal in a 60-minute hockey game. Just atrocious. I mean, you guys go. I'll rant in a little while. You guys go.
We got a long post-game show ahead of us, boys, but especially in that third period, right? Because let's kind of, you know, break down this game here, because obviously, yeah, you know, the goal that Erik Gustafsson scored, you know, that comes off of a turnover, right, Dave? Like Nate Thompson, and again, you know, you have to single out these plays because, you know, Nate Thompson and Nikolai Ehlers, their turnovers directly resulted in those first two goals. They really did. And obviously, you know, on the second goal that Montreal scored, Arturi Lehkonen was the one who scored the second goal. You know, Derek Forbort was having trouble clearing the puck. If you remember, also Connor Hellebuck, you know, played the puck behind the net, Dave. He couldn't get it out, right? Like, so it's not just on Nikolai Ehlers, but it's really kind of confusing what Ehlers was doing there, because I mean, even at the lowest levels of minor hockey, you learn, like, you never want to put the puck up the middle, especially when you don't put any force behind it, right? So it was a really bad giveaway by Ehlers on the second goal. It was a really bad giveaway by Nate Thompson on the first goal. But then Logan Stanley completely changes the outlook of this game for the Jets, right? Like, he starts it off with just a beautiful short side wrist shot. And Carey Price really didn't have a chance in hell at stopping that shot. The second one was, you know, a little bit of that old, you know, Mighty Ducks knuckle puck, where you could tell kind of I thought it was interesting, Dave, because, you know, you watched Stanley play for the Moose and the Jets, but, you know, that shot was deceiving, right? Because it was so tight to his body, and you could see that Price kind of didn't have a read on it at all. So the second goal was a little bit more of one you'd say that maybe Price should have stopped, but the real, I think, disappointment here in this game is the third period, because you had no business, you know, being tied after two periods. So you're thinking, like, Montreal is coming off of a 7-game series. They played, you know, a more condensed schedule than the Jets did, you know, in the last 15 to 20 games of the season. So you're thinking, like, Jets should be the ones that have all the momentum. I don't think they had a shot for a 10-minute stretch in that third period. Like, I wasn't sure what the plan was there, because the Jets just couldn't get anything going. It was like they dumped the puck in, and when they had the chance to dump the puck in, and it just wasn't retrieved. Like there was nothing. Not only were there no scoring chances, there just weren't any shots on net. So I don't know what was happening in that third period. Towards the end of the third period, you could tell Connor Hellebuck was making some really solid saves, and you could tell that the Habs were starting to tire out. But obviously, you know, the Jets didn't carry that into overtime because Cole Caufield finds Tyler Toffoli with a beautiful pass there, and they end it pretty quickly in overtime. But overall, you know, this game should have never got to overtime.
It absolutely should never have got to overtime. You're 100% right about that, Ezzy. There's no question that, you know, Connor Hellebuck was the only Jets player, the only reason the game got to overtime. I'm frankly surprised it even got there, especially how those last 2 minutes of the third period happened, Dave. I thought the Habs were going to get, you know, we've seen the Jets get, you know, bit by a late goal so many times in the regular season. I thought it was going to be another instance like that. And that would have been, you know, a just reward. Look, the Jets had no business, getting whatever moral victory you might take out of getting to overtime. Now, frankly, there is no moral victory because your season's over now. But I'm fairly a loss for words over what we've seen.
First time ever.
Yeah, first time ever. You're right. for what we saw tonight, I'm at a loss for words what we've seen for most of this series. But 16 shots on goal.
Was Pierre-Luc Dubois on the fourth line tonight?
He was on every line. He was on every line.
He was on every line because it was deserving. He wasn't any good. No, none of the Jets forwards were any good. I mean, it was a top to bottom
Nicky failure. Was pretty good tonight.
What? No. I mean, none of the Jets forwards deserved to be any
minus
credit
the
for
giveaway.
Performance.
The
giveaway was pretty atrocious. I watched it about six times. I couldn't believe what he did. I thought to myself, in what league do you one hand on with one hand on the stick, do you put it into the middle of the ice like that? I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. Like, honestly,
you're talking about the Ehlers second goal, second goal.
Lehkonen's goal. Yeah,
you never do that. I mean, a soft play up the middle of the ice is absolute poison for hockey players. Everyone knows that. You don't have to be an NHL player to know that. That's never a play you do. You put that into the corner if you have to. If you can't get your stick on it, so be it. But just teeing it up on, you know, for the Habs, just you put it on a silver platter for them. And
by the way, Drew,
I
was just going to say, I love that there have been at least four comments that I've seen that have literally said Ehlers did not play well after I said that. But you know what? I mean, I just looked at the stat sheet. You know, he had six hits. He was obviously, he wasn't maybe creating as much offense as was needed, but I thought he was definitely noticeable. Look,
that's
damning with faint praise.
Yeah, that I was going to say. Like, there's nobody on the Jets roster tonight who should be holding their head high after that effort. I mean, really. I mean, from a forward perspective, especially, they couldn't sustain any pressure. They, it's like they would dump without chasing. Like, I didn't know what the hell they were doing. I mean, what was it? Carey Price had the six or seven. Like, I thought, didn't you guys learn your lesson from Mike Smith? And now Carey Price, who isn't Mike Smith in terms of handling the puck, but he isn't bad. He's not Connor Hellebuck. So he was everything that they shot in, they stopped. Anytime they got the puck, it was hot potato. So, like, they would just, the defenseman would just dump it into the neutral zone and Montreal would transition. I thought to myself, like, what? Like, there's no value to what you're doing. There literally was no value. The Jets created nothing tonight. I mean, again, those Logan Stanley two goals aside, how can you do this in a game that you're absolutely 100% needing to win or your season is over, which it now is, and you put that kind of effort forward? It's inexcusable. It's inexplicable. And, well, I mean, perhaps, again, like I said, maybe it's an energy thing. Maybe it would have been wise to inject some new players into the lineup. I mean, that's something that I don't really get fully.
What are you talking about, Dave? Ville Heinola was in the lineup tonight. Didn't you see that?
Yeah. No, but I mean, the point is you could have had, Paul Audet is saying that he thought the Jets were going to lose in that final minute. I have to tell you, that final minute, I mean, that couldn't have been any more,
a microcosm of the series.
Microcosm of the series, the game, everything.
The puck was in the Jets' end for at least the last 2 minutes.
Not only that, but the Habs switched at least two, maybe three or four players. Like, they were a well-oiled machine, and they just didn't score. I mean, the only player who really deserves praise tonight, the only player, is Connor Hellebuck. Because
all series long, Dave.
Well, we're talking about tonight, but Drew, we're not doing a reflection on the series right now. We're doing a reflection on the game. So the point is, reflecting on this game, the only guy who deserves any credit whatsoever is Connor Hellebuck. And you can even see the way that – how did the Jets' defense leave fully open like that in overtime? I'm thinking to myself, like, you can see the way it was setting up, and I could see him coming in. Obviously, it's easy to do from the couch, but the point is, like, I just – this team just isn't ready. It's just – it's amazing to me to see what – and again, I guess we shouldn't really be terribly surprised, but – I you know, and cat insult to injury, Mark Scheifele now has to sit for game one of next season.
It's crazy. I mean, it was an absolutely crazy performance given the stakes, given what was on the line, given that it was the end of the season. It was win or go home. And not only, I mean, the Jets are clearly going home, but I think they already were at home. They never showed up. It was an absolute no-show for the Winnipeg Jets in tonight's game. And you can try and sugarcoat it all you want. I mean, we're not going to do that. I'm not sure how anybody that's not wearing the rosiest of rose-colored glasses can find anything about that to take as a silver lining or to take as something you can build upon. But it was just, I mean, it's just an absolutely atrocious performance top to bottom. There is nobody associated with the Winnipeg Jets organization that gets a pass for what we saw in this series and for what we saw tonight. To come out with this kind of effort and this kind of, I mean, we should, again, your point though, Dave, is right. We shouldn't be surprised when you trot out the same damn lineup that already pretty much shit the bed in games 2, 3, and 4 after the Scheifele suspension in game one. Why should you expect anything different? You know, why should the Jets all of a sudden be adept at getting the puck out of their own zone? Why should the Jets all of a sudden be adept at creating offensive zone time? They didn't change the lineup. It was the same poor, you know, roster that was there for games 2, 3, and 4. It was the same poor strategy that was there for games 2, 3, and 4. Nothing whatsoever changed. They didn't try and do anything different to, you know, kick the team in the ass, to give the players something that they can grasp onto as a reason for why they can succeed. Same lineup, game in and game out. And I do think that they're, and this isn't to rag on Nate Thompson, because Nate Thompson for the most part was a fine player this year, but I do think there's something very ironic about Paul Maurice's beloved veteran having such a terrible play while shorthanded that leads to the Montreal Canadiens' first goal. I mean, there is poetic justice in that veterans, we must rely on our veterans no matter how limited they are. And that is how what Nate Thompson did as a veteran presence. And this isn't to rag on Nate Thompson. I want to make that clear. But to see that play, I mean, it's mind-boggling and inexplicable. And if that is the end of the Paul Maurice era, and I'm not saying it is and I'm not saying it isn't, I have no idea what the Jets are going to do. But if that is the game-winning goal, if that is the end of the Paul Maurice era, Nate Thompson not being able to get the puck out, it's a very apropos end to his time behind the Winnipeg Jets bench.
Well, and the Oilers giveaway, right? And the thing is, yeah, Drew, it starts with
the Thompson one.
Yeah, no, that one was probably worse just because there was nobody around him. And you have to also know that I like that other night, another night of the Druth. you know, you can't do that, guys, in game 10 of the season, the regular season, right? Let alone in game 4 when you're down 3-0, right? Like, I'm talking about both turnovers. You just can't do that because those were – there's one thing – if it's a bad turnover, this was a really bad turnover and you made it easy for Montreal, right? Like, those were gifts. And I think, you know, when you talk about personnel versus strategy, Drew, for me, it's probably like, look at, we talked about this on the Saturday show. We talked about this after game 3. I think we were all in agreement, guys, that you could have easily, you know, injected in a David Gustafson or a Jansen Harkins or even a Dominic Toninato. A Ville Heinola is the obvious one in terms of skill on the back end. But it was clear that, guys, that during this whole series, the Jets had trouble getting out of their zone. They had trouble getting into the Montreal zone. They had trouble dictating the pace of play. Like, it seemed like to me, through 4 games of this series, Montreal slowed the game down and Winnipeg was able to turn it up at times. Like, Kyle Connor deserves a lot of credit on Stanley's second goal. Like, he gets that space for himself with his speed into the zone. And Logan Stanley, I believe he came off the bench there. So Connor deserves, and I was going to say Kyle Connor was probably for me. I mean, the Connor Stastny Appleton line, which was just a line just for tonight. I mean, we've never seen those three play together. And maybe we have a few times, but that was just put together by Paul Maurice in game four. I thought that was by far the Jets' best line. And that obviously isn't saying a lot because the Jets didn't have a lot tonight. As you mentioned earlier, Drew, 9 total shots from the forwards is just unacceptable.
I got to interrupt you there for a second, Ezzy. 9 total shots from a forward group. A forward group should be getting you 9 shots a period. I mean, 9 shots total.
Philip Deneau had 7 shots on net tonight. Just to
for 9 comparison. Shots total is hard to wrap your brain around. How the
Jets forwards only had two more shots than Philip Deneau. One player has many shots.
That's hard to comprehend. I mean, it really is hard to comprehend that your entire forward group, you have 12 forwards last time I checked, that from all 12 of those forwards combined, you got 9 shots on goal, Dave. I mean, I can't wrap my brain around that.
Well, I mean, do you want me to go through it? I mean, there's really not much to say. The Pierre-Luc Dubois there. I mean, we're going to find out all the, we'll get all the truths once the end of season media availability happens, which my guess would be, will be what's tomorrow, Tuesday. So my guess is it'll be Wednesday. Wednesday, probably Wednesday would be my guess, but we'll find out what's going on with him because, I mean, guys, I don't care what you said, anyone says, like, there has to be something wrong with him because he wasn't playing with it. I don't know. He just wasn't playing to the degree that you anticipated. And again, I'm not going to pretend like I watched him to any great degree in Columbus and knew, you know, what he was, you know, in terms of watching, being able to break down his game significantly. But, you know, we didn't see it this series. And when Mark Scheifele went out, and look, we're going to be talking about that Mark Scheifele suspension after game one as you know, one of the biggest factors in the Jets being swept. It's not the only factor, but it's for sure one of the biggest. There's no question about it. And ultimately, at the end of the day, like, you know, Dylan DeMello getting injured in the first shift, that's a killer. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw, you know, what he was able to do with Josh Morrissey. But the truth is, you had a Montreal team that's done something. I don't think they've been able to do this for, I don't know how many years they put together this sort of run of a seven wins in a row.
Well, I mean, yeah. Mark Dumont was on our show on Saturday. Mark Dumont, who covers the Habs. And what did he say? It's been 2+ years since the Habs last won 5 in a row. Yeah. Never mind going on this incredible stretch where they've won 7 in a row all in the playoffs.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I think Eric Desjardins, Dave, is watching this and loving it.
Well, and you know, the thing I was going to say is that the Habs fourth line again, though, was one of those situations where you're watching them and you're thinking to yourself, but I mean, really every line, I mean, look, how many shots did every single line, because Montreal's fairly balanced in their approach and their attack. A lot of their guys were distributing and were producing and were creating problems for the Jets, and the Jets just didn't have any answers. Like, you're watching this game and you're thinking to yourself, like, what is wrong with the Jets? Like, how is it in a game that's absolutely critical? How do you give up a goal with a minute to go in the first period and you're down by 1? Now, you already know you're in tough because Montreal has not, right this season, this playoffs, not given up a lead when they're up by, I think, when they've scored the first goal. And yet you do. And it's like, okay, but you know, it's a desperation game. So you're thinking, okay, the first goal is not great to give up, but it's not over. And then you give up a second one. And then the crazy part is you score 2 and the second one, you know, Ezzy's already gone into it, but it wasn't exactly like a highlight reel goal. Good shot by Logan Stanley, but Carey Price should have probably had it. I mean, he saw it from far out. So the reality is you've got a little momentum and then it just dies on the vine. And then the Habs start reimposing their will. And then Ehlers takes that. And again, the refs are, I want everyone to understand and be clear. I'm not blaming this series loss on the refs, but I didn't think the reffing was particularly good again. And like, even that Ehlers, like the Dubois roughing, what is a hit?
Those were both awful calls.
I mean, what is a hit? I mean,
the Ehlers one was worse. Dave.
Yeah. The Ehlers one on Gallagher was worse.
You can't call that, especially when you're not calling that all series. Like those types of,
that's what I mean.
Like on the panel, Dave, they were talking about it being a retaliatory thing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It was like a little cross check. That was a love tap.
No, it was painful. So that tomorrow is the part that just is it's kind of a buzzkill, because you understand in the NHL and playoffs, at least we thought we understood, refs generally put away their whistles and allow the players to play, and let, if it's egregious, then you call it. It's a high stick and you see it in front of you, you call it. But like Pierre-Luc Dubois, like hitting, was it Foley against the boards almost into the bench with the open door? I think it was to Foley. I mean, guys, that's not a roughing penalty. I'm sorry. And then Ehlers on Gallagher. I mean, that's not a penalty. And again, that's not the difference in this game, but it certainly sucks the momentum, right? You know, you've got a little bit of momentum. Then Ehlers gets that penalty late in the second, you kill it off to start the third. But, you know, like we talked about, I mean, it's the third period of a game that you absolutely have to win to send the series back to Winnipeg, and you don't have any shots. Montreal's carrying the play. So to me, it really does, like, those little things don't really matter, because ultimately at the end of the day, this Jets team just didn't deserve to win.
And you know, I just wanted to throw this in there, Drew. Like, I know we're going to be talking about this for sure on next Saturday's show, in terms of kind of the postmortem on the Jets seeding, not the post Malone on Kessa's house, the postmortem.
Sorry, let me stop you for a second there. Is there a more unlikable person, an ex-hockey player, to promote as part of something you want people to watch than Ryan Kessler? I mean, I just don't understand.
Well, especially in Canada.
Yeah, I just don't quite understand. Oh, you know, we needed a former, and this is a complete aside, but I was thinking about it when I was watching those commercials. You know, we need a former player that we can promote for some sort of weird reality TV house thing instead of talking about the game of hockey. What's Ryan Kessler up to as of late? A guy who, yeah, to your point, is not popular in Canada at all, and you're promoting him on a Canadian network. It was just bizarre.
I do want to say one thing. I will, the one positive of not really having to pay as close attention now that the Jets are out is not having to watch some of these awful commercials. If I have to hear about who your favorite team player is one more time on that Tim Hortons commercial, I was going to lose my mind. That is the
most. Did you say Canadian, Austin Matthews? No, I said Shea Weber.
Man, that is the most Canadian worst commercial I've ever seen in my entire life. It's the worst. And it's like one of those commercials they think is really Canadian, and it's just, it's cringy. It's horrible. Anyways, that's my.
And Drew, I booked Ryan Kessler for Saturday's show. He's going to come on.
I mean, that's fine. He might make a great radio guest. I have no problem with him there. I'm just not sure I would want to watch. I mean, well, I'll tell you what. If it's a nice night outside, Ryan Kessler and Post Malone doing something on video. I mean, it's not really much of a toss-up there for me.
I just don't understand why in that promo, Drew, I agree with you. Now that the Jets are out, I think we're all going to be spending a lot more time in the backyard. But I'm not sure what Post Malone was doing with that sword. Like, why did he need to be holding a sword in that promo? Like, is that what we have to look forward to? Post Malone, Ryan Kessler, and a sword in Kessa's house? Like, what's going on there?
Well, I will say that a lot of people seem to be agreeing with me about that Tim Hortons commercial, so that's validating.
Well, there you go. So you want something there tonight, Dave. Anyways,
I don't think it matters what Tim Hortons puts in their commercial. I'm going to buy their coffee and their double chocolate donut.
Well, that's what they know, of course.
Yeah, they know that. They know that they have a captive audience with you there.
I'm their target market.
I want to say good evening to everybody. It's nice to see so many familiar faces, so many new faces joining us on the Illegal Curve post-game show, the final Illegal Curve post-game show for this 2021 season. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. What we ask of you, we ask you to smash the like button. That's your first job. We ask you to join in on the conversation if you so choose. But if you do so, we ask that you keep it clean. You can keep it respectful. That's all we have. That's all we ask of you, the audience. If you want to disagree with one another, by all means, disagreement is fine, as long as it is kept nice and clean and respectful and friendly, because the only people on this show who are allowed to personally insult one another with horrible comments are myself, Ezzy, and Dave. That's the rule. Only the three of us can be horribly mean to one another. The rest of you have to be polite in the chat section. Dave Manuk is in the
top. We already have people violating one of those rules. We have over 500 people here, and we've only got 167 likes. So hit the like button. Like, what are you waiting for? You wouldn't be watching our show if you didn't like it. I mean, that just wouldn't make sense. Might, would you be watching it if you didn't like it? Hit the like
button. They might be hate watching it, like we are going to be with Kess's house coming up or whatever the hell that stupid thing is called. in any event, we're here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. I'm keeping a close eye on the Twitter feed on my second screen over here to see any interesting comments, interesting nuggets coming from the Winnipeg Jets post-game media availability. We'll bring you that video. We'll bring you those interviews a little bit later on in the post-game show. It appears as though we've made progress, though. The last time the Winnipeg Jets were eliminated in a playoff series, not including the bubble, and last time they really no-showed for a game, that was the famous incident where Blake Wheeler told our buddy Paul Friesen to fuck off. It doesn't sound like Wheeler told Friesen to fuck off in tonight's media availability. So I guess, is that progress? I'm not sure, but whatever it is, the Winnipeg Jets are out and their season is over with tonight's 3-2
overtime defeat. How much do you like in that F word for not on TSN 1290? That's all I wanted. Feels good, doesn't it?
Every now and then, if I try to work clean for the most part, but every now and then I've been known to you let an expletive fly once or twice. You will hear from some of the Winnipeg Jets players on this post-game show if everything works out to our plan. And we'll also hear from Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice, who's going to try and explain what went wrong for this Winnipeg Jets team. You go from sweeping, albeit in four very close games, the Edmonton Oilers in round one, to basically no-showing round two against the Montreal Canadiens with an absolute debacle of a four-game series, starting with Mark Scheifele's hit on Jake Evans. That obviously led to Scheifele being suspended for the rest of the series. He'll be suspended for the first game of the 2022 season, or the 2021-22 season, I suppose, as the case may be. But the Winnipeg Jets, when they needed games the most, both last night in game three and tonight in game four, did not step up to the plate. And that, to me, is the biggest red flag, the biggest concern that you have to have about the state of the team and the state of this franchise moving forward. Because, yes, you won a series, and yes, that is good. But right now, it's hard to see, especially when you look at some of the other teams in the NHL, not necessarily the Montreal Canadiens, it's hard to squint hard enough to envision the Winnipeg Jets in the same echelon as the best teams in the NHL.
Well, yeah, Dave mentioned this after last night's game, game three. Last game seems like it was longer than 24 hours ago, but I think that's just because all of these games have kind of blurred into one at this point. But I agree. Like, obviously, Vegas has tied the series up, and it was looking like Colorado wasn't going to lose a game. But those teams have to be the heavy favorites. And obviously, you know, like, Montreal is going to have a shot. But, like, are you guys going to be surprised if every Sportsnet writer, you know, takes Vegas or Colorado, or if every TSN analyst takes Vegas or Colorado to win that series? Like, there's a good chance one of those teams is going to take it all, right? And obviously Tampa Bay is looking good and the Islanders are looking good, but yeah, like nothing in this series would make you think that, you know, Montreal is going to play spoiler and beat Vegas or Colorado. But, you know, again, going back to kind of looking at the series at a macro level, boys, like, you almost wonder if, you know, did the Jets peak in round one, right? Like, did they put all of their emotion, all of their effort into kind of knocking down that Goliath that was, you know, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl? Because it from the first game of this series, the Jets just didn't seem right. Like, and really, I think the series was over after game two. And I realized that, you know, there was still a chance in game three. But if tonight's effort was the worst, game three was the second worst. And I think when you look back at the series, as Dave mentioned, you're always going to remember Mark Scheifele, you know, missing three crucial games in the series, right? You're always going to remember, you know, Dylan DeMello going down and not having, you know, one of your top four defensemen, top pairing defensemen. But you have enough firepower. Like, let's not forget, boys, going into this season, or especially after the Jets traded Line A for Dubois, I should say, the Jets' center depth was the envy of the NHL, right? Like, the whole thing. They bring in Paul Stastny via trade. So you've got Scheifele, Stastny, Dubois, Lowry up the middle. Have that center depth for this exact reason. Dave talked about it. You didn't have this center depth last year in the bubble. So you can't, like, what are we going to blame this on? Like, are you going to blame it on the fact that the Jets' defense isn't good enough? Blame it on, you know, the fact that the Jets' forwards aren't good enough? I think that the Jets just didn't perform well. And you know, the effort was there for the majority of the series. And it just didn't seem like, you know, not only did the Jets not have one or two good scoring lines going, they just didn't seem to have, you know, one or two players that seemed like they were going to be dangerous every time they got on the ice, right? Like, you expected it to be Nick Ehlers, Kyle Connor, Blake Wheeler, like Pierre-Luc Dubois. Nothing he did in the first round against Edmonton would make you think that, you know, he was going to be dangerous in this series. But I think this was an opportunity wasted. Yeah, it was a bad matchup, obviously, for the Jets here in the second round. But this Montreal Canadiens team isn't without its flaws, right? Like, Carey Price had a, you know, 950 plus save percentage. I get it. He was amazing. We all get it. But the Jets made it easy.
Connor Hellebuyck was, it's not that Connor Hellebuyck was a slouch or anything. Connor Hellebuyck was the only reason any of these games were even close. So, I mean, to your point, and you said the point in game three, it's not like the Jets were goalied. It's not like Carey Price goalied the Winnipeg Jets, Dave. Carey Price was good in the series. The Jets made it remarkably easy on him. But if you had to compare which of the two goalies made better saves or better, made better top quality saves, there's no question it was Connor Hellebuyck, because without him,
how many saves did Carey Price make tonight?
Well, based on my count, let's see, the Jets had, 16 shots on goal? So Carey Price, let me do that. Carey the one, subtract that. 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. 14, I think, is the answer that you're looking for.
Yeah. So, I mean, for everything we've talked about, you know, getting in front of Carey Price, taking away his eyes. I mean, the only team that took away eyes was the Jets defense when they were taking away Connor Hellebuyck's eyes on that first goal against. It's, you know, it really is. It's not as if the Jets were a juggernaut team that were expected to come in and destroy the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know anybody who felt it was going to be more than a coin flip in this series. I think everyone thought the goaltending was even. I believe they thought that the forward depth went to the Jets and the defense depth went to the Canadiens. I think that's the way most people looked at this series. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, nobody would have anticipated that you're going to see a sweep the way you did. And like we talked about, you know, Calgary in the bubble, Calgary and Montreal. I mean, Montreal obviously was playing better right now than the way Calgary was going into that bubble, last August against the Jets. But you lose in game one, you lost Scheifele, Laine, and Appleton, and you still managed to win game three. You scrapped and clawed your way to game a 3-2 win in game two. And you know, it's interesting, right? Nikolaj Ehlers said today in his morning availability, this is in the quote, but essentially, we're going to play our asses off. Well, if that's playing their asses off, they didn't do a lot with their. They didn't. They really didn't. Like, I'm sorry, that wasn't an effort that to me was like we left it all out on the ice. That was my impression. I mean, like I said, I watched that game. You know what that game was? That game was chaos. That game was, there was a lack of crispness again, and the execution of the game plan. I mean, we talked about it. Every time I had the puck, they dumped it. They got rid of it. They threw it onto, and so Montreal transitioned quick. They were right. It was either right at Price, who gave it to his defenseman, who fed it right up to the forwards, who had a quick transition, or it was fed from, like, you know, one of the Jets defensemen flipping it into the Montreal zone, the defenseman retrieving the puck, getting it up to the forwards, and a quick attack. That was the way the game went. And you're thinking to yourself, the Jets, like, all we talk about is possession, and all the Jets did was give away possession. How are you going to do anything? And again, like I said, it's a game that this game looked like it was over when it was 2-0. Logan Stanley gives you a bit of life.
Yeah.
Right? Logan Stanley gives you a bit of life. Then you get the second goal. What was it? 3.5 minutes after the first, something along those lines. And so suddenly you've got life in a game you don't expect to have life in. And traditionally you would see what? What do we usually see? We'd see maybe Montreal fold a little bit. You know, they're comfortable. They know they've got the 3-0 lead. And even though they don't want to go back to Winnipeg for game five, you know, there's always that element that might creep in. And, you know, if you're the Jets, well, we're not supposed to be in this game, but we've just tied it up. Let's get rolling. Well, that's not what happened. And the end result is you're going home to Winnipeg, and then you're going to go home to your respective cities.
Well, you know, you talk about execution, Dave, and you talk about, you know, the Jets didn't execute. I still don't know. I mean, it was clear what Montreal was doing. You know, they weren't giving the Jets any time and space. They were pressuring the Jets at every opportunity. I do not, for the life of me, cannot figure out one counter that the Jets tried or the Jets tried to implement into their game plan to prevent Montreal from doing what they were doing. It seemed like the Jets' game plan was exactly the same from game one all the way through the end of game four, even though it clearly wasn't working at any point in the series. That to me is almost as what's bewildering as anything else, is that you saw time and time again that whatever your strategy was failing. Mm-hmm. Montreal had successfully countered it. Montreal had, you know, mitigated whatever your hoped execution was. And the Jets had no response to what Montreal threw at them. To me, that falls on the coaching staff. Because when the strategy doesn't change game in and game out, and your approach is, well, we're just going to have to execute it better than Montreal does. Well, it was clear that they weren't going to execute it better than Montreal was. I don't think it was especially difficult for Montreal to execute it, to be perfectly honest. The Jets were, they were enfeebled in trying to get out of their own zone. They just couldn't do anything to generate the speed necessary to get onto whatever their game plan is. So if you cannot get out of your own zone, if you cannot execute stage one in your approach to success, you need to go back to the drawing board and change what that execution looks like. The Jets didn't do that. They obviously made no lineup changes, and that is beyond bewildering to me. And as a result, they lose in four straight games. They got what they deserved.
And goes back to what we were talking about. It back to what Dave was just talking about. The possession wasn't there. The sustained zone time wasn't there. Like, I think what's so frustrating watching that series is that you didn't get the impression at all that things were going to change, right? Like, at no point in this series do you think, based on a period or a couple of periods, that the Jets were going to win a game and make this interesting. And obviously, after game three, it's pretty much over. Like, we talked about it, right? But when you kind of dummy it down and simplify it, and I like to dummy it down because I'm a dummy, the Jets just it's like, you know, the Habs play high in the zone. They you know, you hear about that gap, and Dave talked about it, right? So you're not really able to enter that zone effectively. And this includes Nikolaj Ehlers, who's one of the best zone entry guys in the league. And then it was, you know, okay, so dumb, but either it was a bad dump in the sense that it went to the middle of the behind the net and Carey Price was able to handle it, or, you know, the first defenseman was able to handle it and the Jets just didn't have a forecheck. Like, it just didn't seem like the Jets forwards could get anything going. And yeah, is part of that because, you know, a guy like Jordy Benn's not the fastest guy, or maybe one of his strongest night in terms of moving that puck quickly out of his own zone. Sure. But I still look at this forward group and I say, you know, whether it's Ehlers, whether it's Kyle Connor, Dubois, you know, Blake Wheeler's obviously not as fast as he used to be. Like, they have guys that can create offense, and they weren't able to do it. They just weren't able to do it. They were frustrated. And I think as this series progressed, it got worse and worse and worse. It didn't get better. And I think that speaks to not having the, like, you saw it a little bit, boys, in the first period, right? Like, you saw that the Jets, and the one thing that is kind of, you know, clear to get kind of through that 1-3-1, you know, the two, you know, big deep and playing up at the line and the back prayer, that is, you know, you chip the puck in a little bit and a forward goes in and, you know, he has to work the cycle down, or he has to, you know, create something. You have to play together. You have to crash the net. You saw that a little bit with Connor and Stastny, that line. Whoever won that line, you saw a little bit early in the game, and you saw them aggressiveness. Like I talked about, you know, Nick Ehlers had seven hits. You know, you had guys, you know, kind of banging around, but you didn't see it for any extended period of time. That's the key here. Each game kind of looked the same, and that's the definition of insanity, when you don't change anything and you keep getting the same results. I guess that's my point. And, you know, it's kind of lip service at this point. The Jets were awful in this series. They were terrible. Not just in one game. They were swept by a team that's better than them right now. On paper, I think, you know, this is a more even series, but the Habs just executed their game plan from the in the first
game. The Habs had a better game plan.
Didn't see any answers.
the Habs had a better game plan. The Habs executed that game plan better. At any point in time, not that they really needed to ever change their game plan, Dave, because the Jets didn't do anything that would force the Habs to change it. But the, you know, the Habs were top to bottom a better team. They were a better team on the ice, and they were better on the bench. Dominic Ducharme outcoached Paul Maurice. I mean, the fact that there were no lineup changes for tonight's game, after what we witnessed in games 1, 2, and 3, especially games 2 and 3 when it came to the defense, because I know that Ville Heinola wasn't going to necessarily be the be-all and end-all. And I know that, you know, expecting him to carry the team on his shoulders was not realistic. But when you can't get the puck out of your own zone, and really you're relying on Jordy Benn to be your answer when you lose a player like Dylan DeMello, I mean, that's a failure of Kevin Cheveldayoff going back to the trade deadline. That's a failure of Paul Maurice to not realize that Jordy Benn wasn't good enough to help your team succeed. I just don't know what the Jets expected, what management expected in tonight's game by trotting out the same lineup over and over again, Dave.
Who knows? They could have done it, Drew. I mean, they obviously, Paul Maurice, we know he has a tendency, pattern of defaulting always to veteran players. And so the likelihood of guys like David Gustafson, Ville Heinola, Dylan Samberg, I would have been shocked if Dylan Samberg played based on the fact that he's played in the AHL all season long. But, you know, there were a lot of, you know, Jansen Harkins is a guy who, to me, would have given it. What it always comes down to with Paul Maurice is, can a guy who's coming in perform more than one role? I mean, Christian Vesalainen, it was like, oh, well, he's only a 5-on-5 guy, which, again, like I said to you guys yesterday in yesterday's show, is really, it's kind of bullshit because these guys all do special teams in the AHL. So Christian Vesalainen played power play in the AHL. You're going to tell me, to be honest with you guys, you want to give Christian Vesalainen a little bit of confidence, put him on power play 2, and watch his shot. Because if you give him open, get him open, you give him some time, he's got a pretty good shot. I once watched him and Patrick Laine, you know, beside each other talking finish and just like firing shots on net.
What were they saying?
All I understand was Kitos. But other than that, there was not much I picked up. But
well, you have a long off season ahead of you now, Dave, where you can try and brush up on your finish.
I could, but I
probably we needed some laughs there, Dave. Like it's been a pretty depressing last 15 minutes here, breaking down the series. So I wanted to bring some levity here, boys.
Well, we could talk about my one-on-one with Jeff Malott, who was newly signed by the Winnipeg Jets. That went live on
there. We go. Now we're talking, Dave.
AllegiantCurve.com. If anybody wants to listen,
I watched the whole thing. It was great.
Runs at about just under 14 minutes. Jeff and I spoke about the contract he signed with the Winnipeg Jets last week. So he finished second in rookie scoring.
He looked at the various opportunities ahead for him, and he said, "No, I'm good. Keep me with the Moose. I know I won't play for the Jets anytime soon."
Anyway, so if anybody wants to watch that.
He actually said Dave was one of the reasons why he signed with the Jets, actually. He loved his coverage so much for Illegal Curve that he was like, yeah, let me sign that contract.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, the only guy who I really thought, there were two guys who I thought, three, really. Jansen Harkins, who I don't know why he's fallen. I mean, I know that he had injury issues, but I don't know why he's fallen. And he didn't, oh, thank you, Sandy, I appreciate that. And I know he didn't produce as well this year, but obviously not really given a ton of opportunity. But Jansen Harkins would have been a player. David Gustafson, to me, would have, if you wanted to pull out Nate Thompson or Trevor Lewis, they probably weren't going to pull out Trevor Lewis. But if you wanted to pull out Nate Thompson, today was a perfect example of why you would do it in this game. You know, it's a back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Get a guy who is young, fresh legs, you know, who's mature physically. I mean, David Gustafson can handle any of these guys that are going to come his way in terms of, thank you very much. So, thank you, C-Mac. I appreciate that. So the point is that a guy like Gustafson...
That doesn't count, Dave. You're related to C-Mac.
I'm pretty sure I am C-Mac. Anyways, yeah. The point
C-Mac,
is that...
C-Mac, C-Manuk. C-Mac, D-Manuk. It's the same thing, basically.
But I'm just saying that you could have had a guy like Gustafson who can come in and play penalty kill. He's done it all season long for the Manitoba Moose. He played power play, too, for the Manitoba Moose. So that guy can... He's comfortable playing anything. You could have had Ville Heinola come in. Guys, we're not saying that the... I mean, for people saying it was more than just one or two players, I agree. Like, the Jets game plan stunk tonight. I mean, they had nothing. This team had zero. I mean, you cannot in a game that is an elimination game for you produce that sort of lack of offense. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, logically, you would never look at that. If you just remove the logos, you would say, okay, you know, the Habs were getting, you know, pummeled in terms of shots because the Jets were so desperate for this game. That's obviously not what we saw. And like I said, a lack of creativity, lack of interest in possession. I just didn't understand the Jets' game plan from the start. They kind of started with a little bit of a flurry. But other than that, like I said, until the Logan Stanley goals gave them some life in that second period, it was not looking good for the Winnipeg Jets.
And you talk about Jansen Harkins, Dave, and it's, you know, it's almost like Paul Maurice doesn't remember that we remember what he said. Because at the end of last year, Paul Maurice say? He said that Jansen Harkins is now an NHL regular. And then he didn't treat him like an NHL regular at any point in the season. And with all due respect to Trevor Lewis and Nate Thompson, and again, they performed admirably for the Winnipeg Jets this season. They didn't perform so admirably that they had to be guaranteed a roster spot game in and game out. There would have been no harm done by giving Jansen Harkins an opportunity. And more than a six minutes a game for one game every 4 weeks. Get him back into the rhythm. And sure, injuries were a factor. And sure, injuries probably knocked him off of his schedule and off of his internal game plan for the season. But it was just the lack of any, not even outside the box thinking, because this isn't outside the box thinking. This is just thinking without, you know, not only relying on the same guys night in and night out, and maybe, you know, goosing your team and giving your team some additional energy by putting in a guy like Jansen Harkins, by putting in a guy like David Gustafson, just doing anything, especially in these playoffs where they had nothing, where in this four-game sweep by the hands of the Montreal Canadiens, they had absolutely no jump. They had no boost. They had no energy. They had nothing.
I went to Montana 2 years ago for my birthday, by the way. Right, go ahead, Drew.
That they had absolutely nothing to that they could point to as a driver of the team, as anything that was giving them an energy boost, and to just trot out the same 12 forwards game in and game out, and to trot out the same six defensemen game in and game out when they're clearly not able to get the job done, is what I cannot wrap my brain around. I cannot understand why you sit in your coach's office and, you know, and it's, you know, Paul Maurice talking with, you know, Charlie Huddy and talking with Jamie Compan and talking with everybody else and talking with Dave Lowry. Remember, in game one against the Oilers, when Dominic Toninato scored the game-winning goal, and Paul Maurice said, credit goes to the assistant coaches for encouraging me to put Toninato in the lineup. Why, in this series against the Montreal Canadiens, there wasn't that same approach taken when it was obvious that the 12 forwards that they were deploying just didn't have enough to get the Jets over the hump or get them to break through whatever it was that the Montreal Canadiens were doing. I mean, what were they waiting for? Were they waiting for game five, game six, game seven? Well, guess what? There's not going to be a game five. There's not going to be a game six. There's not going to be a game seven. You lost in four. So whatever you were waiting it for, whatever tomorrow you were waiting for, that tomorrow isn't coming until September and the regular season.
You know, I feel like I'm back in first year university taking atmospheric science. I got a D and I knew that I wasn't getting anything higher than that, because the point I'm trying to make here is I agree with you, Drew. Like, if you want to break down all of the things that went bad for the Jets, like, and that's a long list. It's a laundry list of things, and how it didn't seem like the Jets necessarily had any way of getting through or improving on any of those things that they were struggling on. It was a really puzzling and frustrating series. But also, you have to just say sometimes that the Jets didn't play well, and they just didn't have it, right? Like, and I realize that, you know, for all the people that are tuning in right now, that's not top-notch analysis that they're used to, but like they just weren't good in this series. except for Connor Hellebuck. Like, Connor Hellebuck was good throughout the whole series. We know he's the team MVP. And yeah, there were a few other players. Like, I thought Adam Lowry had a good solid series, obviously with a couple goals. You know, Logan Stanley was solid throughout the whole series. You know, I thought Paul Stastny was much better, guys, tonight than he was in game three. On that, we talked about that second line, Stastny, Connor, and I don't think anybody's going to do what was the Jets' best line tonight, right? But, you know, Christian Vestlin and playing 7 minutes, it was the same thing yesterday. And that, mm-hmm. I agree with you. I love the fact that Alien Art Forms, first off, that's a great name. I love that he's cheering for the Bombers, because at this point, we can't for the Jets anymore. Hopefully, we do have a CFL season this year. But regardless,
to bring on the illegal procedure post-game show?
Oh, God.
Exactly. shout out to Jonathan Kongbo. Look at, they just did not play well. They did not play. And it wasn't like it was a game two where you thought they should have won, right? Like, even game two, the one they lost 1-0, they didn't deserve to win that game. There were no games in the series that they deserved to win. Connor Buck was the only reason this game was tied at 2 and went to overtime. And again, like, I hate to say this, guys, but, you know, like, we can't put on the rose-colored glasses. Like, you just can't do that. They didn't play well. And sure, you can use rightfully abuse. There's still a lot of really good hockey players on this team, and just didn't get it done.
Really good hockey game. To Ezzie's point, I mean, how many goals between in that top six in this series?
None. Was it?
Kyle Connor had one.
Yeah, Kyle Connor had one, but I think that was the grand total of it. Wheeler didn't have a point.
Yeah.
Blake Wheeler didn't have a point in this series. I mean, you know, you are the captain of the Winnipeg Jets, and I know that you're without Mark Scheifele, but you need to have a point. You need to produce without Mark Scheifele. You need to do more. That's, you know, I didn't see any of the Winnipeg Jets players elevate their game when Scheifele went out. Now, Scheifele's suspension, whatever you think about it, the word that I would use is a combination of selfish by Scheifele for doing what he did to Jake Evans. I would use that. I don't think it was deserving of a 4-game suspension, but guess what? The Jets had adversity placed in front of them by virtue of the Scheifele injury or Scheifele suspension and the DeMelo injury, and not one player stepped up. That to me is a pretty damning statement, that because, again, to your point, Dave, you've talked about this a lot on the post-game shows of this series. When they had adversity in the bubble in Calgary last year, they stepped up. Granted, they only stepped up for that one game, but they won that game. They won that game too after losing Appleton, Scheifele, and Line A in game one. Today, this game, this series, I didn't see one Jets forward step up. And that to me is absolutely damning that nobody stepped up for them.
I will say this. What a mistake I made from expecting someone not to answer a rhetorical question.
Well, you know, that may have been an error in judgment by you, but that's okay.
Really, I remember when earlier in the show Dave Drew said he was speechless, or he was at a loss for words.
I'm like, okay, well, there goes my airtime. Thanks, Drew. Sure.
Sorry, you know what? You guys got me all fired up. What can I say about that? I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. We're going to take our only commercial break. We're trying to get some of the post-game audio, post-game video to bring that to you here on the post-game show. If we can, we'll get it to you. Otherwise, it will be available, of course, on illegalcurve.com. Much more to come. We're talking about the Jets. Their season ends with a whimper, not a bang. They lose in overtime tonight, 3-2 to the Montreal Canadiens. They get swept 4-0. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Monday night, welcome back to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Nice to see so many of you joining us on this Monday night. Some new faces and some familiar faces. All we ask of you is two things. One, smash the like button. That, you know, We appreciate if you can do that. Smash the like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, you know, leave us some nice feedback, you know, preferably if you have negative feedback, just email that directly to us so you don't publicly tell us that. You know, if you want to shit on us via email, that's fine. Totally understand that. But you can send us those comments. And the all other thing is, if you're chatting with one another in the chat, just keep it nice, keep it polite, keep it friendly, disagree. That's fine. Disagreement is perfectly reasonable, but just try and keep it respectful. That's all we ask of you. That's your job here on the Illegal Curve post-game show.
You know how I know the Jets season... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I just say I want to give a shout out to all of our sponsors because they really are so crucial for making these post-game shows a reality and, of course, making the Saturday Illegal Curve hockey show a reality. Our group of sponsors include Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Boston Pizza, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, and our friends, of course, at Seagram's. Support these fine companies, support these fine local businesses because they support the Legal Curve Hockey and they make these post-game shows a reality, game in and game out. And I know this is the final post-game show of the year. We're still going to be running the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday morning, so that's not going anywhere. But just while I'm talking and while I'm rambling a little bit, we want to. These have been so much fun for us to do. This is obviously new for us. This is obviously something we didn't do in years past. You know, these largely came about when the radio station met its untimely demise. But the reason we've been able to do these, the reason we've been able to go through with these so many times is largely the interaction and the fun that we're having with everybody that's in the chat and everybody that's been watching us doing these for the last, oh gosh, how many of these have we done now? 30 some odd? 40 some odd? A real high number. And really, we thank you so much for that. And I know this is going to be the final post-game show of this year. Operative word this year. Hopefully we'll get back at it for next season as well. But Saturday mornings, we're still not going anywhere. So stay tuned for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this coming Saturday. Much more to talk about tonight, though, as the Winnipeg Jets season comes to an end. Obviously not the way they wanted it to after the highs of losing to the Edmonton Oilers in that four-game sweep in the first round. You know, the highest highs, the lowest lows, that's often what you get in professional sports. And that's what the Winnipeg Jets and Winnipeg Jets fans have experienced over the past, I'd say, you know, three and a half weeks or so from the game one of the Oilers series to game four of the Habs series tonight.
Yeah. And what I was going to say before that, Drew, is, you know that the Jets season just ended because people are already talking about the merits of Seth Jones and how the Jets should acquire Seth Jones. So we're already talking about off-season stuff. So we're going to have lots of time here for the
rest. You remember that draft? Remember when he slid down as him? You couldn't believe it?
Yeah, I remember we ran into him. That was the New York draft, right? And he was walking around. I mean, he's an excellent defenseman, but I think it's just funny that we're already talking about next year. And good to see Frank Zappia. I saw Dom in there earlier, so I was just waiting for Frank to pop in. But yeah, I mean, it's a really disappointing end to the season, boys. Like when you sweep the Oilers in the way that you did, you have that, you know, 8-9 day break. It's one thing to lose, you know, to the Montreal Canadiens, but the way that they lost, Drew said, you know, they went out with a whimper instead of a bang. And it's true, aside from Logan Stanley, who did his best job to, you know, provide the bang with those two goals in the second period, you know, there just wasn't enough in this series. And look, there's going to be a lot of time for the Jets organization to do soul searching, right? And, you know, there are guys that are going to have to be re-signed and, you know, some players won't be back. Like, is Paul Stastny going to be back? I would be absolutely fine with Paul Stastny getting a 1 or a 2 year deal. Is Matty Perreault going to be back? Who are the Jets going to protect in the expansion draft? Like, we talked a lot about Logan Stanley.
As you're ruining all our summer material.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, there's a lot of questions. And I think, you know, it goes to, you know, what we talked about in these four games against the Habs. It was just a lot of questions and no answers for the Jets. And you're kind of watching, especially after, you know, the first couple games, and you're thinking, okay, you know, if the Jets do this, then, you know, maybe they earn a split or win a couple games in Montreal. But they just didn't do anything to change the trajectory of the series, right? Like, they just couldn't find a way, you know, to get more offense created. They couldn't find a way to get, you know, a cycle game going. They couldn't get, you know, lines going. They didn't, like, the Habs were rolling four lines in the Leaf series, and they just continued to roll four lines, right? Like we talked about Perry, Armia, Stahl, like they were noticeable. They were good. Like Perry was good again tonight. And, you know, it's kind of funny that both times the Jets have played the Corey Perry, they've been swept, right? But obviously completely different teams 6 years apart. But I mean, Perry was good. And, you know, so there's not one player that you can point to and say that, like, obviously, you know, Nick Suzuki was really good. Philip Deneau is one of the most underrated two-way forwards. But it just, it was the Habs were a better team that executed their game plan. And I don't think we really know what the Jets' game plan was. That's the biggest issue here.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's somewhat inconceivable to have to say after four games of playoffs that you have no idea what the Jets' game plan was. And sure, Montreal gets some credit for executing their game plan better than whatever the Jets were trying to do. But the fact that the Jets never tried to change anything around, the fact that the Jets never tried to take a different approach, that to me is what's most bewildering about what we've seen over the last four games, is that the Jets were satisfied to just continue to bang their heads against the wall that was the Montreal Canadiens, and they had no other options. They had no other page in the binder that they could turn to try and figure out a way to penetrate the all of a sudden impenetrable Montreal Canadiens defense. And you know, the Habs have a good defense. No question about that. They have a better defense than the Jets do. But the fact that the Jets just didn't try and change anything up was really troubling to me. And that really leads me with a lot of questions as to where this team goes from here. Where does this team go? What is the next approach for the Winnipeg Jets?
You have to go with your youth. You have to see, you know, Dave's been talking about this for months now. Like Drew, you got to see, you know, David Gustafson's got to get like a full-time look. Ville Heinola's got to get a full-time look. Christian Vesalainen has to be given a full-time look.
Do you have any reason to believe, Ezzy, that Paul Maurice will allow that to happen? Because I don't.
Will he even be the coach though of this team?
Well, that's a great question, and that's an absolutely fantastic question.
I'm not saying he won't be, and I'm not advocating for that. But I mean, I think you have to. The way this series went, I think you have to ask that question. I'm not leaning one way or the other, but I think you have to ask that question. Is he the right guy to get this team to the promised land? Because, you know, Blake Wheeler's not getting any younger. Mark Scheifele's not getting any younger. Nobody's getting any younger. I'm certainly not getting any younger. I'm turning 39 next month.
Hey, but happy birthday.
Yeah, July 24th.
By the way, Scott Bowles' birthday today.
Happy birthday,
yeah,
Scotty. Happy
birthday, Scotty. That's right. Yeah.
You know, again, you remember I said this a couple years back, right? After the Jets lost to the Blues boys. Like, I hate that window talk, but let's use the window metaphor. What is the Jets' window here? I don't think it's, you know, 3 or 4 years. Like, when you have players that are either currently in their prime or just a little bit out of their prime, you know, like, put it this way. The Jets aren't, you know, one or two players away from, you know, all of a sudden turning into a Stanley Cup contender. Are there going to be moves to be made? Yes. The Jets absolutely need to bring in a top four defenseman. I think... on the left side. I've said this before. That's where I think the Jets need to, the right side is what I meant to say. Ville Heinola, there's a good chance he'll be your second pair left side defenseman. So that's obvious. You have to, you know, sign some of your depth players. Neil Pionk's going to get a big raise. Like, what's the future of Andrew Kopp, right? Like, we know he needs a new contract. But the point I'm trying to make here is kind of addressing what you said. Yeah, Peter says it's a broken window. Like, I think what's the most disappointing, I'll put it this way, about the way this series went, boys, is that after the way they dispatched the Oilers, there was so much promise. And if the Jets were going up against the Leafs, okay, then, you know, there's that element of, you know, being an underdog. But the Jets were actually the favorite in this series. And it seems like they didn't like being in that role. And they were kind of struggling with that all series long, that, you know, the Habs were frustrating them just like they frustrated the Leafs in those last three games. And, you know, they just couldn't solve the Habs defense. They couldn't solve Carey Price. So where do they go from here? I think it starts with, you know, giving some of these young prospects like Gustafson, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg. I think there's a good chance he gets a look with the Jets next year, right, Dave? Like, I think it's going to be a younger team next year.
I think it has to be. I mean, to your point, Ezzy, we've seen where this strategy that the Jets employ can take them. And yep. The limit, the ceiling on it, where you get absolutely outchanced, outplayed at 5-on-5, almost game in and game out, but oftentimes get your bacon saved by Connor Hellebuck and his exceptional goaltending talent, that ceiling is maybe winning a round. And everything has to fall exactly perfectly right to win that round.
Sorry, Drew, just want to mention, I forgot Cole Perfetti. Cole Perfetti is going to have a big role on the Jets next year.
Well, I mean, time will tell on that. I mean, he very well might. He, you know, who knows what next year is going to look like in terms of the OHL. He won't be in the AHL. It's either I'm expecting that by, you know, September, October, the OHL will be back up and running, and it's either going to be OHL or NHL for Cole Perfetti. And time will obviously tell on that front. But I think we've seen where the current approach for the Winnipeg Jets can take them. And it can take them one round. That is the ceiling. How they're currently constructed is going to take them. You can only take, you know, excellent goaltending and a good power play, because it's not a great power play anymore. I would say it's a good power play. It can only take you so far. And the Jets need to recalibrate the franchise. I'm not saying you have to tear it down. It's not a rebuild. Certainly nothing along those lines. But it is a retooling and a rejigging of the personnel and the style in which they play. And it's been probably a long time coming since the reckoning of the Jets defense a number of years ago. They've always been trying to play catch up to when their defense got decimated. And if this is the catalyst to do that, I think this is the time to do it rather than, you know, trying to get muddle through it for another season and getting everybody up front, everybody on the offensive side of your team, another year older and another year on the bad side of the curve, Dave.
I promise I will not make this long. Wouldn't a guy like Dougie Hamilton, boys, look good on the Jets defense?
Sure.
Like, to me, that's exactly what the Jets need, is Dougie Hamilton. But Dave, go ahead.
All I was going to say is that the problem with the Jets defense situation, if you think about it, is what did they always lament when they had this excellent defense? Trouba, Morrissey, Sherratt, Byfuglien, Myers. You know, when their top six was good, and what were they waiting for? They're waiting for their forward group to catch up. Then their forward group caught up, and they obviously lost their entire defensive group, essentially. And now you've got a really good young back end. I mean, you've got so many. I mean, as he's gone through it, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, Johnny Kovacevic. Johnny Kovacevic, 6'5", right shot defenseman, big boy, can skate, getting better. Pascal Vincent likes him. He's a guy you should watch out for. Declan Chisholm. There's guys who are on this back end. The problem is they're young. So Dylan Sandberg, I mean, a lot of the experts who had never watched him play a game in his life, including me, I'm not pretending like I'd seen him play in college. I hadn't. But I talked to people who had, a guy I trust quite a bit. And when I spoke to him before this season, he said to me, from what he knows, Dylan Sandberg is going to need the year in the AHL. And you know what?
I got it.
But what I saw, he needed it. And I don't have a problem with it, because guys, we see what happens when players get an opportunity to develop properly and not get rushed in. You can rush a guy in, and you can have Alexander Burmistrov, you know, Zach Bogosian. Mm-hmm. You know, all these guys with a lot of promise, and you rush them into the NHL too soon and it crushes their confidence. And I mean, Zach Bogosian eventually, you know, regained it, won a Stanley Cup, but still, you know what I'm saying? There's that opportunity to ruin these guys. Now, not everybody's the same linear path, right? Logan Stanley, different path. Jansen Harkins had to go to the ECHL, fight his way back up to the AHL, and then obviously to the NHL. So there's opportunity, but I'm just saying that there's the window that, as he's talking about, you've got an aging forward group, right? You've got Paul Stastny. Forget about whether they're UFA or right now they're on this team, let's just say.
Sure.
The point is, you got Wheeler's older, Perreault's older, Stastny's older, and I know you're losing some of those guys due to UFA, but you've still got some guys in your prime. You've still got Connor Hellebuck. The question is, can that young defensive core take what they've learned this year, right? Ville Heinola, Craig Eisinger, who I trust, I think he knows a thing or two about hockey, called Ville Heinola the best player in the AHL during his time with the Manitoba Moose this season. So, I mean, again, I watched every game that Ville, I mean, nobody in the chat really, I mean, you guys can all say, oh, what can Ville Heinola do? And I'm not trying to be insulting, but like, how many of you people actually watched Ville Heinola play? I mean, I know none of you watched him live because there was nobody in the building. So you may have watched him on AHL TV, and that's great, and I'm not diminishing it.
A little humble brag there, Dave M.
No, no, but I'm just saying, but the truth is, you know, there's so much in hockey, you can't just say, oh, well, I saw what he did with the puck because the camera was on him. The reality is you have to watch what these guys do away from the puck. That's sometimes just as important as what they do with it. So, you know, Ville Heinola was doing things all over the ice that were good. Now people will say, well, why wasn't he playing? I don't make the decisions. I'm just telling you what I saw and what people I know and trust spoke about. So there's a guy, like I said, a guy like Sandberg, a guy who switched to the right side this year in certain opportunities to gain that experience. So there are some young guys, and Sandberg and Kovacev have developed quite a chemistry. They played a lot of games. I want to say they played 20, 25 games together. And I joked with both of them at the end of the season, the media availability about that idea of playing, you know, as a kind of a twin towers for the Manitoba Moose. I think Sandberg's what, 6'2", 6'3", and like I said, Kovacevic 6'5". So there's opportunity for these young guys if they can seize it. And with Logan Stanley, we saw what he was able to do in the offseason and get himself ready for training camp. Maybe one of these guys takes that step forward and brings that size. Sandberg can play mean. He's not going to bring you offense. Kovacevic a little more offense, but he can also play a physical game. That's what the Jets need. I mean, we saw it, right? If we scroll through the chat, I guarantee you a lot of the comments are going to be the Jets are either too slow on defense or they're too small. Well, you could augment that with it from within if these guys are able to take that next step. Now, again, I'm not putting a lot on their shoulders. You know, Kovacevic, 2 years pro, Sandberg, 1 year pro. But we'll see if those guys who have, you know, a number of college years under their belts can make that jump, you know, maybe from the Jets that's found money and that gives you that bump that this group needs. Because right now, like I said, you've got some high-end forward talent. You've got one of the best goaltenders in the world. And now if you can get that defensive element of your team up to par, then maybe you've got something.
Yeah, no, and it's good points there. And I just wanted to throw in, Drew, we're going to get into this more on the Saturday show. We're getting a little bit away from, you know, the Jets-Habs series here that just wrapped up. But I think it's unquestionable, guys, that there's going to be a lot of roster turnover next year. And for sure on defense, Dave, like I think we all agree, like Ville Heinola is ready for the NHL. Like I have no reason to think he isn't. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, the same thing goes for Dylan Sandberg. I think there's a good chance that he could play, you know, a big chunk of the season in the NHL. Johnny Kovacevic, like he might get his first taste of NHL action. You know, he might spend the majority of the season with the Moose, but he's for sure, had his best AHL season, right, Dave? Yep. So I think on defense, but then, you know, we talked about the forward group, right? Like, is Andrew Kopp going to be back? Is Perreault going to be back? Stasny? Like guys like, you know, Trevor Lewis and Nate Thompson, these guys are on 1 year deals. There's a possibility, guys, the entire fourth line looks different next year, right? Like David Gustafson could be, you know, centering that fourth line, and, you know, it could be two different players that we saw this year. So this aside from the goaltending, like I think we all know Hellebuck's going to be back and maybe Lauren Brossoit is going to be back again as the backup. But aside from that, I think, you know, you might see 5, 6, 7 new faces in the regular lineup for the Jets next year. So I think this is a bit of a crossroads for this team.
I don't disagree with you, Ezzy. I think it's entirely possible, and you guys have done a very good job outlining all the different, you know, areas and players that might change over and might see a changing of the guard or just a rotation. Certainly, I mean, there's no reason to think that Trevor Lewis and Nate Thompson are necessarily going to be back. I mean, who knows about a guy like Derek Forbort? I mean, you know, obviously they're going to lose one player likely through an expansion draft situation, unless the Jets do something where they work a trade with the Seattle Kraken. You know, Andrew Kopp, 1 year away from unrestricted free agent status. So you made your point. You know, what's his future here, especially, you know, given some of the acrimonious contract negotiations he's had with the Jets so far, with his agent being, of course, Kurt Overhard, who's never met a hard bargain and a hard fight that he hasn't wanted to battle on behalf of his client. A lot of new things are going to happen with this Winnipeg Jets team. And I do think it's time, though. It's clear that you've sort of, with the approach that you've taken for the past, you know, 3 years since the run to the Western Conference Final, you've gone as far as you can with that approach. It's not going to work any longer. It's time to do something else. And I know that free agency isn't often a significant avenue for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, especially big ticket, big name free agents are not typically clamoring or knocking down the door to come here. You know, for better or worse, that's the reality. Their loss, they're missing out on how great of a city this is, and that we.
I agree with that.
And the three of us and everybody in the chat knows that, but those guys, you know, that's their loss that they don't know that. But it really is a crossroads. It really is going to be one of the most fascinating off seasons for the Winnipeg Jets, and I do believe it starts this week. I don't think the news is done for this week. You're going to hear. As you said, it's, you know, the end of the season availabilities will be likely on Wednesday, maybe on Thursday, but I would expect it probably be to Wednesday. And you're going to hear from, you know, Jets head coach Paul Maurice, and you're going to hear from a collection of different players, and you're going to hear from Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, because I think there are going to be a lot of questions asked of Kevin Cheveldayoff as to where this team goes from here. And why or if Paul Maurice is going to be the right man to lead the Jets. Look, I'm not a huge fan of Paul Maurice, the coach. Paul Maurice, the human being, is a quality human being, and he has served as the Winnipeg Jets head coach with respect and with aplomb and with dignity, and he deserves all the accolades in the world for taking that position and treating it with the respect that it deserves. He's never once been unnecessarily snippy with the media. He's had his edge with the media, but that's perfectly reasonable. Paul Maurice is a good man, and I hope nothing but the best for him, you know, going forward with his family. And if that's as the Winnipeg Jets head coach, so be it. That's not a decision I would make, but that's not my decision to make. Whatever it is going to be an absolutely fascinating week. 2 weeks, you know, free agency period coming forward with the Winnipeg Jets here, because it's one thing to lose in the second round. Getting to the second round was a great accomplishment for this Winnipeg Jets team. Being able to defeat the Edmonton Oilers, you know, we're in the media. We don't cheer. We don't root. We don't have rooting interests. But as a born and bred Winnipegger who lived through the 1980s, beating the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah, thank you, Ezzy. Beating the Edmonton Oilers in four games in the manner in which it did is something I'll never forget. Just because, you know, of all the bad memories we've all had when it came to the Jets and the Oilers, that was fun. And I say that, you know, knowing, you know, I say that with all the asterisks and caveats that I put on it before. That was fun. That was nice, you know, for in a shitty year. You know, we're still somehow locked in our homes because of the mismanagement of this pandemic. You know, that was just a fun stretch that we all got to experience.
Especially game three.
Game three was terrific. Game four, triple overtime. We're never going to forget that. We're never going to forget. Well, you will, because you sure as shit weren't on there. Dave and I aren't going to forget that it was 2:30 in the morning. I had to go to sleep, boys.
I had nothing left in the tank. Like,
that it was 2:30 in the morning and we had 700 plus people.
Hey, I was still at the rink.
Yeah.
Dave went to bed at 4:30 that night. Yeah. Or I guess that morning.
Dave's the man.
It's all about being, they say I'm a night owl, but that even that for me was a little bit much. I'm not gonna lie, I was pretty knocked out that that next day after that one, because
knocked out or nocturnal?
I was a little bit of both.
Yeah. In any event, I mean, whatever it was something we're gonna remember. But the entire glow from the first round, victory by the Winnipeg Jets does get lost in how you lose in the second round here, in how you get defeated by the Montreal Canadiens, losing four straight. and being bereft of answers. I'm sorry, what was that, Dave?
I was going to say, you seem to have a lot of answers tonight.
He's speaking the truth.
I don't know that I have the answers necessarily. I don't know that I have the answers, but I have maybe the ability to tap into to at least my opinion, and maybe some people agree with me, the psyche of what Winnipeg Jets fans are experiencing and have experienced during this playoff run for the Winnipeg Jets.
Should we just of this post-game show a therapy session?
You know what? For a lot of people, that might be what this is, Ezzy. For a lot of people, that might be what this is, just an opportunity to get together and chat it out and vent hug if they need to. And yeah, just, you know, when we can't hug it out because we're not physically allowed to, because we have to physically distance and all that jazz, you know, maybe that this is what we're doing instead. This is our version of the Illegal Curve therapy session. I am Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is the Illegal Curve post-game show for one final time on this 2021 NHL season. We remind you, of course, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That will continue unabated until we take a break for the summer. But you can stick with us for that, of course, this coming Saturday.
Thank you for switching yourself and Dave. That was throwing me off.
No, I didn't like it.
I didn't do anything to
be in the top left.
It just happened automatically.
Yeah. I'm always gonna be a right winger. Let's not forget.
Yeah, very true there, Mr. Manuk. You are the right winger to my left winging balance. Ezzy, you can be our. Well, I don't know if you're a speedy center. I'm not sure what you are. Are you a grinding center?
I don't know what I am.
You know,
I'm something.
It's speaking of centermen. Now that the season's over. I find it to be utterly, I mean, I think it's a shame. That's my word for it, that it is a bit of a shame that, as far as I can remember, not once did we see the Winnipeg Jets go up the middle. Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, Lowry. And when that trade happened on that Saturday morning, that's a large part of what we talked about is the center depth for the Winnipeg Jets.
We never saw it. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy that not once did we see that center depth on display. And I know that's what a lot of people pointed at throughout the course of the hype when that trade happened. And then obviously Pierre-Luc Dubois' stock has dropped significantly here in Winnipeg, given that he hasn't scored a goal in, if my math is correct, 312 games is what I was going to go with, but it might be 24 or whatever. It's one or the other. But I do think that it's something. I don't even know what the proper word for it is that not once did we see those four guys go up the middle to really demonstrate that center ice depth that we all thought was going to be the envy of the NHL and not once did we see it.
Yeah. And part of that obviously was, you know, the quarantine, and then the Jets used, you know, Dubois on the wing, and then they used Stastny on the wing. And yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. And it almost is kind of, you know, like we were using the word microcosm of this crazy year. We knew this year was going to be unlike any other year, with the Jets only playing Canadian teams in one division and having, you know, a 56 game schedule and all these, three games in four nights, five games in seven nights, all that type of stuff. So it kind of almost makes sense in a year in which nothing made sense.
And on that note, I think we're done for the rest of the season. We thank everybody. That this is the final Illegal Curve post-game show of the year, but we remind everybody to still stay tuned on Saturday mornings for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll keep that rocking and rolling all throughout the off-season. And, of course, keep it tuned to IllegalCurve.com and our social media platforms. We're trying to see if we can get some special year-end stuff together, similar to what Dave M. did with the Manitoba Moose. If we're able to do that for the Jets, we will, of course, keep you abreast of all of that information. It's been a fascinating season, a season like no other, undoubtedly, and it's certainly become a cliche to some extent, but it has been like no other. We've all had plenty of time at home and plenty of time to consider what we do and how we do it. And, I'm really... This has been a really fun experiment, a really fun opportunity to do these post-game shows. They've been fun for us three. They've been fun to interact with everybody in the chat and see how many of you have been here night in and night out, and we truly, truly do appreciate your support. We appreciate the support of our sponsors. One more time for the post-game shows. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and Seagram's. We thank them all very much for their support of Illegal Curve Hockey. We thank you for your support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Smash the like button if you haven't already done it on your way out for tonight's post-game show. We remind you that Kenny and Rennie, I think Huss is there. I assume Ken is going to be there soon if he's not already there. Sean and Huss are there right now. Maybe Scotty B is going to be there, but I'm not sure. If you want more Jets talk, that post-game show, the post-post-game show is still rolling, so check them out. For Dave Manuk in the top right, for Ezra Ginsberg in the bottom center, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we thank you for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show. And from all of us to all of you, we wish you good night and good luck.